This is Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN. It's our daily in-depth look at people and issues that are shaping the local area. Inside Douglas County is presented by Concrete Builder Supply. Now, Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
We cover lots of things in Douglas County, but we also try to keep in touch with all the federal members of Congress that represent our area and all of Oregon. Congressman Cliff Bentz of Washington, D.C., joining us right now. Congressman, thanks for being on.
It's great to be back with you, Kyle. Thanks for the opportunity.
A lot of things to cover. Let's get right to it. First off, what is your take on the big, beautiful bill?
Well, this is definitely big, 1,100 pages long. There's some extraordinarily important things in the bill that absolutely will make small business and low-income people happy, because the protections for them are extremely important. Most people don't remember, but back in 2017, the Trump Tax Cuts and Jobs Act was passed, and a bunch of those provisions, particularly those specific to individuals and to small business, expire at the end of this year. So if we don't extend those tax cuts from those years back in 2017, it's going to be a 22% tax hike for many. Average family of four would see a $1,700 tax hike. The child tax credit would be cut in half from $2,000 to $1,000. I mean, there's a whole bunch of things. 26 million small businesses would lose a 20% pass-through deduction. So the bill contains a significant portion of those 1,100 pages are extensions of those tax features. And there's much more in the bill. So I would say the best word for the bill is necessary. We better do it, or there's going to be probably a recession triggered by the dramatic increase in tax.
What about criticisms from Elon Musk, Rand Paul, and others that it doesn't go far enough and has too much pork in it?
It's odd that either would talk about pork. The two parts of the bill that spend are more money for the border, which, by the way, has been an enormous success. Nobody hears about the border anymore because people aren't coming across it. The illegal entries are down by 95%. And so we want to build on that success. And so there's money in the bill to do that. The other part of the so-called pork when it comes to spending is for the military. And we realized as we watched what was going on in Ukraine, Ukraine's a success in attacking Russian aircraft, that's because of drone technology. And we are far behind in that, and this bill contains provisions that would at least take some steps to try to catch up. The other part that they might be talking about would be perhaps the increase in the state and local tax deduction, the so-called SALT tax. I'm not in favor of that part of the bill, but a bunch of my colleagues had to have it in the bill, so that's how things work when you have to get along, and we sure do. And that increase in that deduction is going to be somewhere $300-400 million, and those kinds of numbers. I think it might be billion over the 10 years, and those kind of numbers are really, really, really difficult to accept. But they are extremely beneficial for the people in certain states, including Oregon, by the way, for higher income people. And so that's going to come along with a whole bunch of other things that are very, very good. So all things considered, I supported the bill.
Now, what about Democrats and some nonpartisan groups that have raised concerns about some people getting cuts to medical care?
What I try to do is point out to people that the word cuts is the wrong word. What we're doing is making sure that the law as it is written right now is being followed, and currently it's not being followed. For example, there are about 1.4 million illegal immigrants here in the United States that are on Medicaid, and they should not be on Medicaid. And so the law does not allow it. And so the bill that we passed makes it more likely that those folks would not be allowed to use that program for which they are not legally eligible. And by the way, before I talk much more about Medicaid, I want to assure people that is an extraordinarily important program and one that we absolutely, we Republicans, want to protect. And so to hear the Democrats engage in what we call Medi-Scare tactics, trying to scare people, is really sad. We want to protect that program along with Medicare and along with Social Security. But if you listen to Democrats, oh my goodness, hair on fire and saying a lot of things that are totally untrue. But in any event, the illegal immigrants would be taken off that program, the ineligible recipients would be taken off that program, and then able-bodied adults who don't choose to work, and then the work standard in this bill is 80 hours a month, 20 hours a week, and it doesn't have to be work. You can volunteer. I mean, this is something that we're saying, if you want this free program, you're going to have to work or at least volunteer or go back to school. And there's about 4.2 million across the United States that would be affected. About 71,000 in Oregon would be affected. But again, these are people who are able-bodied people and not parents of kids. So these things are all good things. They're not cuts.
Was or is the DOGE program the right way to make cuts? And is it legal since Congress is supposed to authorize funding of programs?
Yeah, so two questions there. The first one, is DOGE the right way? I would just say that I compared Elon to a surgeon wearing boxing gloves. His approach was too abrupt and too harsh in many cases and not adequately explained to people, including Congress, regarding what they were doing. On the other hand, the cuts are necessary. We have to reduce our spending, and this is one of the spaces where we have to do it. And I'll just tell you, Kyle, it is so difficult to reduce spending and reduce force. We don't want people losing jobs, but at the end of the day, it has been done before, and we don't have any choice. We have to stop spending as much money, and that means we're going to have a reduction in force, just like large corporations that suddenly realize they're spending too much money. We have to do that when we realize the government is spending too much money. By the way, this was done years ago during the Clinton administration. Newt Gingrich and Republicans forced a reduction in the people working for federal government by 17%. About 377,000 people were laid off back in those days. And so this is not the first time, but it's very difficult. It could probably have been done more carefully. And when cutting money Congress is authorized to, I will just say that the president does not have really the legal ability to, quote, impound, end quote, money. So what you're seeing now and what we're seeing now are the cuts that the president, has been working on certain programs are making their way to us in the form of rescission bills. And those will be in front of us actually next week, a bunch of them.
What about concerns about congressional authority being taken away by executive orders, even if you maybe like what the executive order has to say?
Well, I'm not enthusiastic about erosion of congressional authority. I don't blame the president, though, for issuing as many over 100 executive orders, because what he's trying to do is carry out the promises he made running for the office and actually get things done. And one thing I've noticed since I've been here, this is my fifth year here, things move awfully slow. And I know that the people that, including me, supported the president, understand that if you want to take action, it's a good idea to have a leader who's at least calling out the direction. I think his executive orders won't have too much teeth unless they're backed up with congressional action, and we're working on that right now.
A lot of concern in this area about the Job Corps program, specifically the Wolf Creek Job Corps, which I think just recently celebrated its 60th anniversary. What are your thoughts about that?
Well, all of us hate to see that program lost across the nation. Again, I had my staff take a look at how effective the Job Corps was, and about 38% of the folks graduate from that program. But the cost is what is most disconcerting. The cost per graduate is about $155,000. And so what we're having to do is make incredibly difficult choices, and where we're trying to protect these other programs, this sadly, as good as this program is going to be one of them that goes. I have been contacted, and I did reach out on at least two different occasions to see if there's any help for this, and I'm going to guess that there's not. But I am looking into it. I understand how important it is, but I'll tell you, I wish their outcomes were a little better for the price we're paying.
And one of the other concerns about that is the rapid way it is taking place, much like some of the other cuts where people find they may only have weeks where, you know, commitments have been made and plans have been made to, you know, be in a two-year program or whatever, and suddenly you're in the middle of things and what you've been hoping to achieve gets cut. Thoughts?
I'll just say that's one of the things that we were calling out as we talked to people about the program. I'll just say about whether or not there was any hope of getting executive support for continuing the program. But this disruption is going to occur regardless, and that's why I say trying to, as Reagan said, stop a government program, which he said was the closest thing to perpetual life. A government program. But I don't want to undersell the value of the program. These programs are good. I remember the Job Corps when it came out to Crane, Oregon for the first time all those years ago. It was a big deal. And over the years, I think it's had some significant success.
Let's talk about federal cuts regarding farming and agriculture that could impact your congressional district.
Right. So there have been cuts in under the USDA offices and the FSA, Farm Service Agency offices, and other things, the Bureau of Reclamation. All of these agencies are going through this Forest Service bill, reduction in forest activity, and it's not pleasant for the folks that have the jobs and for those who rely on those services. It's just that back when Gingrich and Clinton were going through this, they were going for a 17% reduction. The numbers I have heard here are generally around 10%, in some cases larger. But getting it done is extraordinarily difficult. Of course, very, very damaging to those who lose their jobs. But the sad part about this is we're spending too much money and we have to make these reductions.
Now, for smaller farmers, what are their options if they're in the midst of something where these cuts leave them unable to continue farming? Do we have some issues there with potential loss of more small farmers?
Well, I don't. If they're being pushed by one of these cuts into or closer to insolvency, they need to call our office, because I've not heard of that. That much of a damaging consequence. That means either they have called my office and no one's told me about it, which I would hope isn't the case. But if they do have a problem, they need to call our office. And I'll have my team here give me the proper telephone number and I'll give it to you in a few minutes. But the bottom line is, if they're being pushed toward insolvency by one of these cuts, please call.
Now, let's you kind of already touched on this big change in the southern border situation in the last few months.
Right. So people may not remember, but there was over 200,000 people coming across the border illegally, or maybe another word would be inappropriately. By the way, the number is 541-776-4646. That's 541-776-4646. That's my Medford office. And if they're being challenged financially by virtue of one of these cuts, other than losing their job, which, again, they have my sympathy, but if a business or something is encountering difficulties, that's putting them at risk, we're going to take a call. As far as the southern border goes, the good news is that 200,000-person-per-month number has dropped down to closer to 5,000 sometimes, even less, and a lot of it has to do just with the attitude that we're going to take you back, and that means people have stopped coming. So it's working. The bill contains provisions for both due process efforts in the form of courts and other things, and then money for the wall.
Now, one of the other things we haven't heard as much about for the last few weeks, but was certainly something a couple of months ago, was adding to America land-wise, and should we really try to make Canada a state?
Well, I don't think we can make them a state, but if they were come to us in Congress and suggest, as we've heard from various other territories of the United States, we'd certainly listen. But I'll just tell you that the enthusiasm for adding anything as a state wanes quickly when you suddenly realize that you would have two senators. And so you can imagine how much of a political challenge there is when it comes to adding two more senators to the 100 we currently have. So that's an interesting concept. There's some really, really interesting elements of what's going on in whether it's Greenland or to Canada, and it has to do with national security. So I'll just say, I understand why the president is making these suggestions. That has a lot to do with national security and other arguments. But the real challenge is the Senate, to be honest with you.
Let's talk about in Congress, what is the schedule for the summer? I know there's an August recess that tends to last for a few weeks. How long are you guys in session right now?
So this time around, we're in for 136 days. It may not sound like much, but it's way more than was the case the last 3 years. It was 115 days, 117 days, 110 days of actual in session on the floor voting days. This year it's 136. August is off, but off is a very odd term. It means we're not here in D.C., but it means we're back home traveling around as I did last 2 weeks ago now. I was down in Southern Oregon. And basically for a couple, 3 days. And then I actually spoke out at Eagle Point at a Memorial Day service. And then I'll be heading back that direction to be the speaker at the OIT commencement in a week or so. So those kinds of events kind of take up many of the days in August. Then we go back for all of September. Last year we had October off because it was an election year. We don't this year, and I think we're here for 3 weeks. Something like that in October. But more days than not this year.
Now, fire season began for the Douglas Forest Protective Association today. Any shift actively taking place regarding federal forest management under the Trump administration?
Right. Well, I saw the administration entered into a joint memorandum between the Forest Service and the Secretary of the Interior. So USDA and Interior in addressing fire and the need to cooperate more closely. I actually was down, as I said, in the Southern Oregon, and I met with the Forest Service and the BLM personally just a week or so ago and asked them repeatedly, if you don't have what you need, for goodness sakes, tell me so that we can do our best to obtain whatever it is you might need, whether that's personnel or whether that's equipment. What I would say to anybody listening that thinks they're short of something in order to get ready for the fire season, for goodness sakes, reach out to me again. And again, that number is 541-776-4646, and just say, hey, we know we're short of something, and then we would do our best to try to remedy that situation.
As far as the logging and the timber folks, though, do you see anything changing on the federal lands?
Yeah, so thank you for asking. The big, beautiful bill has in it a series of provisions that address getting back into the woods, and they address it extremely effectively. Specifically, the bill requires the Forest Service to conduct timber sales and to provide long-term timber contracts. It improves forest health and making our forest more resilient through a series of investments. The main thing, though, that it does is it tries to increase the amount of money coming to the government by allowing timber sales and requiring a 25% increase in the amount of timber being taken off our federal lands. And the idea is, of course, to use that timber better rather than allowing it to burn up.
For the next few months, what are your big priorities?
Well, I've been working with the White House for real in trying to make sure that Douglas County gets the emergency money that it needs for recovering from the flood event that you guys had, that odd, huge deluge of water that fell on you. I've been working with Commissioner Tim Freeman on that, and I'm happy to say that we reached out to the White House just a couple of days ago and ask, please, Mr. President, go ahead and issue that emergency declaration. So I'm working on that, of course. I'm still working on the Columbia River Treaty and trying to make sure that agriculture is protected as we work out our deal with Canada. I'm working that FEMA exercise with Douglas County includes Burns, the closest thing to my hometown. Grew up about 60 miles from there, but they're flooded out also at the same time, so they're included in that FEMA activity. Of course, we're spending a lot of our time right now waiting for the Senate to see what it's going to do with the great big bill, and then we have some bills that I just got news today that my bills for the Dalles on adding 100 acres to their water supply system up in the federal forest is going to have a markup just next week, and that's really, really good news for the city of the Dalles. Saves them all kinds of money and helps them expand their reservoir for their city. And then, of course, we'll be working on the rescission bills, and we'll be working with the president, because I'm on Energy and Commerce, to look at his proposal to reduce drug prices by 80%. That's going to be a very interesting conversation.
And quickly, before we go, any update on the potential Oregon Veterans Home on the Roseburg VA campus and the federal funding piece that's needed there?
Right. So, of course, the head of the VA was in Roseburg just 3 weeks ago. It happened by an odd stroke of coincidence that literally the next day, I think it might have been 2 days, I met with him personally at one of the meetings I go to. I talked to him about Roseburg and the importance of that home. And I said, hey, this is something we really, really, really want to see happen. Can you please move us up the priority list? And so he's a nice guy. I'm not sure how effective I was in communicating to him the need for it. But I'll tell you, he sure remembered his meeting in Roseburg. So the folks there did a really good job of impressing upon him the need for the facility.
All right, out of time for now. We'll connect again soon, live from Washington, D.C. Congressman Cliff Benz, thanks for being on today.
Thank you, Kyle. Appreciate it.
1258 News Radio, 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Listening to Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN. A daily look at the people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. It's presented by Concrete Builder Supply. The show will be available as a podcast in just a few minutes at 541radio.com. So share it around and let others who weren't listening live know about today's show. Inside Douglas County is a public affairs presentation of Brook Communications. Stay connected with local news and information. News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.